Welcome to Russell on the Move, LCCC's weekly community affairs update. To keep you connected to our mission of advancing equity through empowerment of children, adults, and families of Russell and other West Louisville neighborhoods. Spend the next hour tuned in right here. Get the latest news of family services, community opportunities, businesses, and economic development, and much more. Hear from our leaders and special guests. Call in to be a part of this history-making broadcast. Join LCCC's movement to create vibrant neighborhood conditions for children, for adults, and businesses to thrive socially, academically, artistically, and economically. This is the next episode of Russell on the Move with your host, Kevin Fields. Leading with vision, educating on economic mobility, advancing equity, developing quality.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Russell on the Move. This is Kevin Fields, the president and CEO at LCCC. And we're here today with a big day in the city of Louisville. It is Give for Good Louisville Day. This day, September 14th. But you know what's even more special for us at Louisville Central Community Center? Today is the eve of our 75th Founders Day. That's right. We were founded on September the 15th in the year 1948. So we'll be saying happy birthday to LCCC on tomorrow. And, you know, in the spirit of Give for Good, you know, we've been talking about the 75-year challenge throughout this year, and we're going to continue talking about it because my extraordinary executive assistant reminded me on this week, earlier this week, that we're going to be 75 all year long. We just turned 75 tomorrow, but we're going to be 75 for the next 12 months. So the 75-year challenge is not going to go away, and you're going to be hearing from us. And we want you to know that this is your time to demonstrate your support for our organization. We have been committed to our mission for 75 years. We've been in the Russell neighborhood, and Census Tract 30, the poorest census tract in all of Jefferson County, throughout our history. And we believe we made some impact, but, you know, we also believe that we're young enough to know that we're going to continue to make even more impact in the future. So you can support our mission on Give for Good Day by checking us out on our website. We have our own giving campaign, the 75-year challenge. You can go to our website at lccnews.org and make your contribution there. And also, you can just follow us on social media, on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. We're there, and you can find a way to donate on that platform as well. Shout out to everybody who has supported the campaign up to this point. I do hope my dear friend and brother, Frank Anderson, is listening this morning, because Frank stepped up to the challenge a few months ago and made a nice donation. And Brother Frank, I need you to give me a call, because we got a nice thank you we want to give you. And so, but we need your mailing address, and I haven't been able to catch up with you to do that. So holler at us at the office, Frank, at 13th and Ali. Make sure we got your mailing address. I'm excited about today's show. We have in the studio with us a best-selling author in the making, and he's well-known. He is a phenomenal brother, and I must say I've known Meeshawn Daniels for right about 25 years now, and he is one of the most interesting men I know. Ever since I've met him, he has intrigued me to want to learn more, and I'm excited that he's with us today, because he's got a new book that is trending all over this nation, going up the charts. The book is selling, I Am Not Your Black. And who is he talking to? America. That's the name of the book, y'all. I Am Not Your Black, America. And I'm so excited, and I just want to welcome him. He's here with Brother Herbert and I in the studio. Let me just say, first of all, good morning, both of my dear friends. Brother Meeshawn, good morning to you.
Good morning, my brother K. Kevin Fields. Man, 25 years. Has it been that we know one another for 25 years?
Yes, sir. I met you in my early days at the Urban League.
Wow, dude.
Yeah.
That's 25 years. Ooh, Lord, I was just a little young.
You was a spring chicken back then.
I was just getting out the military 25 years ago, man. I was just arriving here in Louisville, Kentucky, boy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good to see you here. Herbert, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to see you, Kevin. Glad to be here this morning.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I'm excited to be here because this is a special show on Give for Good Day. And Michonne is a giver. And in his book, he has given us a lot to learn, a lot to think about. He has really poured his soul into this book, and you can get it when you read it. And Michonne, I know it's on its way to becoming a bestseller, and who knows from where it might go. But let's talk about yourself. I want to, you're a veteran to broadcast media, but as if this was your first time in a radio studio, let our listening audience know a little bit about who you are, just from the beginning. Who is Michonne Daniels?
Thanks for asking that question. Who am I? Michonne T. Daniels. Originally, I'm from Miami, Florida. Born at Jackson Memorial Hospital, January 6, 1961. You hear that date, January 6, okay? That's another conversation. Mm-hmm. So, born to my mother, Hattie L. Conley Floyd Daniels, and to my father, Clyde Michonne Floyd. So now you know where I get my name from, my father's middle name. And then, and I got throw this in here so you understand when you get the book, you can understand. My father, my birth father was my seeding father. So he seeded me, but he didn't stay with me, Kevin. You know, he just seeded me. So I got the last name Daniels from my adopted foster father, who is in the book as well, Charles E. Daniels, who I call Dad. So that brings you up to speed of, you know, how I got the last name Daniels when you hear Floyd in my name and everything. Growing up in Miami, I was a introvert. Kevin, you can't believe I was a quiet person. Matter of fact, I was so quiet, Kevin, that my parents used to take me to the doctor and ask me why he's not talking. My mother said, I'm making up for it now.
Yeah, you know, I read the book, and you talk about epiphanies in your book. I bet you had plenty of epiphanies to get you to give it. It took a lot to change you from being an introvert to who you are today, because, brother, you ain't quiet now.
Yeah, so, yes, I used to get picked on all the time, man. You know, kids used to take my lunch money, and, you know, they used to beat me up. Girls wasn't talking to me, bro. I mean, I couldn't get a girl to look at me, dude. I mean, they used to laugh at me, dude. I mean, all the jocks and everything, you know, I always wanted to be hang out, but I was a small kid.
And this
kid.
Is why you were living in Florida.
And this is why I was living in Miami.
So I'm going to get right into the book.
Yes, sir.
I Am Not Your Black America. Tell us what the inspiration is behind the book.
Well, I was just telling her when he said he was wanting to find out more about who I was and everything. Well, the inspiration come from when my mother put me in the military in 1978, I was a cook. And then I changed my MOS, my job, and I became a surgical technologist. And becoming a surgical technologist, I found myself in an environment of the dominant European culture. And as you listen to me, you're going to learn something. I don't use color. It's a discipline that I've learned how to do over 20 plus years after started doing this process of saying I'm not your black. So prior to me getting to the operating room, Kevin, I was sheltered from being hanging out with us. So I didn't know how to be down black. I remember the first time I was in the military in my basic training, the brothers like, you from Miami. They said, you ain't black. That's what you mean.
So when you were growing up in Miami, were your friends as a kid? Were your friends black? Who were your friends as a kid?
Brother, did I tell you I was an introvert? So I was a square.
You didn't hang with nobody.
I mean, I hung, but I was just like, I tag alone. I was just a tag alone.
Okay. Now, who were you tagging with?
Avon Bree Love and Casey. But they, I was just glad to be in their presence. Okay.
And were they black? White?
Oh yeah, but the being black, I found out because my parents kept me sheltered. So Kevin, you won't believe it. I never went to black churches the whole childhood. Growing up, can you imagine born in the 60s and never attending a black church? Never. My whole entire time going into, until I went into the military, I never went to a black church. So that contributed to me not knowing all the traditional, come on, man, y'all know what it is. You know, yeah. All the,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you didn't learn what
it meant. I didn't know. I didn't know how to, because it's a little bit more than just that. It was all the accolades and what it required. So in my first 3 years in the military, the brothers said they took me under their wing because I didn't know how to drink. I didn't know how to talk to the ladies. I didn't have no swagger learning how to, you know, talk a little yang-yang. And the ladies, and I had no conversation. So my first 3 years, I had to learn how to be black. Because being black had nothing to do with the color of my skin. I discovered being black is a mentality. It's a behavior. It's an ideology. It's a way that you have to be able to be accepted among your peers, among your people. So I went through all that. And then when I changed my MOS and went into the medical field, I was no longer among us. I found myself in the dominant European culture. And again, guess what I heard while I was in that field? As I was operating that, I heard from them, you're not black, Meshawn. All right, what do you mean? What they were saying is because by this time, I had learned how to be the Michael Jordan in the operating room. I'm good at what I do. So being good at what you do, I would not allow them to box me into whatever they thought being black was.
So when they said that you were not black because you were good at what
because I was good at what I did. Okay. It's because I would not accept the things that they thought that being black, I suppose. I wanted to.
You didn't fit their stereotype.
Right. I didn't fit the stereotype that they thought that I should stay in. And so I used to hear, Meshawn, and they used to kind of clown with me. Your wife probably tells you to stay in your place. And I knew what they were saying. What are you talking about, stay in my place? And you know what I mean. No, I don't know what you mean, okay? And so what I started realizing is that there is a construct, and this is where the conversation starts. There is already a construct what it is to be black in America. And if you, the dominant European culture, created that construct. So the construct is in place, but the problem is that many of us just jump in the construct and we just live in it. Then we get angry when people treat us a certain way and everything. But you didn't realize you bought into the construct. You bought into the construct. And so I never bought into the construct. I know I want to go do. So when I married my wife, this is my lovely wife now, 27 years. I took her place. She's from Louisville. She's from Louisville, and so from the West End. So when I took her, do you know any other surgical techs?
No.
Do you know any other surgical techs?
No.
Okay. Well, let me give you a little history about the surgical techs because I think it's important. Vivian Thomas is he was the person that the first Descendants of American Slaves surgical tech. He actually helped surgery and heart surgery. He was a janitor that learned, and Mordette played this movie. The Lord's made these hands, the Lord's hands. It's a great movie about a surgical technologist, but a gentleman who was a housekeeping or a janitor that came up to become a surgical technologist. When I learned that, I discovered that, man, I'm walking in his shoes, man. He opened up the doors. So what happened is when I married my wife, I exposed her to things that she was not used to being to because my finances allowed me to do things differently than what she was used to. And that's what I'm talking about. I did not allow my color of my skin or the dominant European culture to keep me boxed into a certain lifestyle.
Okay. So the whole idea I'm not your black just is you expressing the need to break out of that stereotype,
that construct
of what America or the white European dominant culture sees you as being, and you're projecting that on the culture of the rest of us who are of that persuasion as being Black, African-American.
Right.
And we're going to get into some of that in a moment, you know, the whole DASI and ADOS concepts. But I really want to talk to you a little bit more about the book, because I've read your book, and it's an excellent, well done book. It's a great book.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate you for being very vulnerable in the book, because you open up and share with us some pretty intimate details about your upbringing. You talked about how you were, introverted, shy, but you also talked about some dysfunctionality in your family.
Yes.
And some things that you experienced as a child that created trauma that you've dealt with throughout your life.
Yes.
And I just want to applaud you for that. But how does that manifest today, that the dysfunctionality and the trauma that it created? You know, you talked about family incest and some real deep subjects.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I you know, Kevin, it means a lot to me to have someone who's read my book to talk to me about my book. It means a lot to know where someone has taken the time to look into and see what it is I'm talking about. I thank you for doing that. And the fact that you got the audio is even more powerful, because I think the audio is even more powerful than the read. Okay, because I hired that gentleman. He's a voice actor, you know. Michael just tears it up. Okay, he tears it up.
Yeah, I mean, you get the emotion, and when you listen to it, it's very dramatic, and it is. It's touching.
Yeah. So, you know, without trying to tell everything, yes, I, in the military, I learned that if you want to win people trust, respect, and confidence, the best way to win their trust, respect, and confidence is become vulnerable. You can't lead other people somewhere trying to hold on to not being vulnerable. It is best to be vulnerable, okay, so people can see you authentic and you're genuine about who you are when you put yourself out there. And so, as you said, Kevin, I put myself out there, didn't I? I mean, even my wife today, she said, "Babe, I don't know if I would have said all that. You know, I don't know if I should have said it." And I'm not going to tell her, because I want to make it a secret. Okay, I want you to get me. What is he talking about? You know, I want you to go check it out. But the most important thing, Kevin, is that all the people that I have, men, Kevin, that have called me, and I'm emotional about that. It helps me realize that the book is doing with it. The men that have called me, bro. No, y'all don't understand, Kevin. The men who have called me and said, "Me, Sean, oh my God, man, I can be honestly now, just you put it out there. Let me tell you, I've been through that. I went through that. I've experienced that." That has been the most rewarding thing of my book, Kevin.
Well, and it has ministerial qualities. You are ministering to men, the male spirit, through your testimonies in your book. Because Herbert and I have been working with the group, and you've learned about this group, Real Men, Real Talk.
Right.
And we've had brothers come over, and it's very touching, you know, to observe, but also to participate in discussions where men are being vulnerable and talking about what hurts them, what they've gone through. And it's a part of healing, you know, it's a part of ministering to that trauma. And so, Herbert, you know, you've experienced some of that too, right?
Right, right. I mean, that's part of being a man. You know, you got to experience some things that are good and, you know, bad or whatever, you know. So I think, you know, I haven't read your book yet, but I'm looking forward to, you know, getting into it, Mr. Daniels, and seeing, you know, a little bit detail of what, you know, your experience was. But I think everybody has an experience that they remember that makes them better people. So, you know, you go through what you go through, there's a reason for it, right?
Yes, and I want to say, since Kevin read my book, you know, so you see all the stuff about my dad and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's my dad. You know, it is and then my mother, okay? My mother lives with me too, okay? Well, she lives in Louisville and everything. You know, the most important, because they didn't know I was going to drop all that in there. Now, they didn't know. So I just want you to know. I dropped some real I mean, you know, Kevin, I dropped some stuff in there. It was like, woo!
You did, but I tell you again, I mentioned that it helps to minister to spirit of people because a lot of people go through things in life. But by you expressing yours, it helps us to reflect on ours. But you also talk about how you've worked to overcome the trauma.
Right.
And that's the healing
process. That's the healing process. But it was not just healing just for me. My parents, when they read the book, I just told them, go read my book.
How did they react?
Well, that's why I wanted that. That was another beautiful part of that, okay? My father, because they no longer married and everything, they've been married now, you know, they've been divorced now over 27 years. So they read the book separately. So my father read the book first, and then my mother read the book and everything. And my father said to me, and it was a beautiful thing, he said, it's your story to tell, son.
Yeah.
And he said, I can't be upset about your story that you had to tell. And then when my mother read the book, because, you know, my mother played an intimate role in some of the nonsense that occurred in my life and everything, my mother said the same thing. It's your story to tell, son, and I'm proud of you.
Well, you talked about your mom, your dad, your sister.
My sister, yeah.
Now, how does was her read on it?
She's not read the book.
Getting ready yet.
Is she
still healing? Because she went through some of the same trauma you went through.
Yes, she's not healed. Okay. My sister, you know, it's not in the book, but my sister went through Yahweh. You know what Yahweh is? Yahweh, I'm from Miami, okay? So my family got captured in Yahweh. And so my sister got captured as a young age in Yahweh, so she became a breeding for Yahweh. My children, my sister had over 9 children, okay, in that Yahweh thing. And it done some damage to her, okay? Mm-hmm. So she got a lot of stuff, plus the personal stuff that you found out what happened to her when she was growing up.
Yeah.
So all that played a role. But so she's not healed from it. And she, you know, she's probably not going to want to because there's just a lot of things. You have to self-reflect. You got to be willing to go there and let things off. The book really served, you know, Kevin, if I can keep it in. It was therapy for me, dude.
Well, I can see where it was. And I know it has healing power for you, and I think it has the potential to have healing power for others. And, you know, I've read some other material on you even before the book, and I'm trying to remember the source of this, but this was something either I heard you speak about or I read about you where you have nieces, nephews, and you go off and visit them, and you've had some experiences that you've testified on. And where I'm getting to, Meeshawn, is Uncle Meeshawn.
Uncle Meeshawn.
Uncle Meeshawn. We got Uncle Meeshawn, and we even got an UncleMeeshawn.com. And so let's talk about
UncleMeeshawn.com.
Who is Uncle Meeshawn?
Yes, and, you know, thank you for going there. This is an interesting thing, you know. Again, my family dynamics, we are all over the place. So I hadn't seen my sister in over, you know, 20-plus years. And then, you know, we made contact with her, and there it is. She had all these, you know, children and everything. And so I packed up my wife and my mother. We go down to see her and everything. You know, I have my nice little, you know, I mean, riding my car and everything. Just doing me. But I hadn't seen her in a while and everything. So, you know, she introduced me to my nieces and everything. And as we were there and everything, hey, you know, I wasn't thinking nothing of it. You know, we went to the store, bam, I paid for it, okay? We went to the movie, bam, I'm paying for it. They wanted some pizza and everything, bam, I paid for it. I mean, I'm just
being uncle.
Being uncle, you know, I'm just doing what I'm doing.
The rich uncle.
Okay, that's questionable. But so what happened is that as we're driving, I hear, Aunt Jackie, can we come to Louisville, Kentucky with you? And my wife said, sure, baby, sure you can come. So as we packing up, we have been there about 4 days. As we packing up and going back to our get ready to get in my car and everything, guess what I'm seeing her?
What's that?
Two of my nieces got their bags packed and everything.
They come to stay. That's all right.
They come to live with Uncle Meeshawn.
Because the truth of the matter is, my sister was living in a two-bedroom apartment with, you know, eight kids and everything. They were like, look, look here. I don't know much about this Uncle Misha. We want to roll with Uncle Misha. And so that's where the, I mean, that's where I really. Where,
and you turned it into a brand.
Yeah, I turned it into
a brand. You turned it into a brand. Uncle
so,
Misha.
So everybody need an Uncle Misha on in their life, you know? Hey, hey, you may need an Uncle Misha who come around and make it rain. You know, make it rain.
Yes.
They didn't care about my political views. They didn't care about any of that, Kevin. Only thing they knew is Uncle Misha came and made it rain. Okay.
So do they get any residuals off the company, UncleMeShawn.com?
You already know the answer to that question, bro.
Because you turned it into an enterprise. I like that about you. So let me ask you this, Meshawn. I'm coming back to the book. I read the review, the one review.
Yes.
You're getting a great review. The one reviewer gave you a 5 out of 5. I mean, that's 100%.
Right.
And he touched on a lot of salient points of why it's such a great book. But I want to know, because we're not going to review the book today, because we're here to help pitch it and sell it. But I do want the listening audience to know, how has I Am Not Your Black America changed your life? And it was just released this year in 2023.
March 11th.
Since then, what has changed in your life?
Great question, Kevin, because I've just had some people ask me some questions about my 2006 Peace Festival that I participated in. And you knew me during that time, too. I brought George Huff here on the waterfront and everything. Thing didn't turn out the way we needed to. I lost a lot of money, but it wasn't about the money. It was about the experience. Sometimes you got to go through something to wake you up to some things. So a person asked me just a couple of days ago, Meshawn, the Peace Festival and everything, 2006, what did it do? Well, I told him, had you asked me that question prior to me writing my book, I probably would have a different answer. I said, but now that I wrote my book and I really let things out, what I realize is that God will help you find yourself through trials and tribulations. Okay. And so that's what the book helped me to reveal. I may not have liked how my life began, but I've discovered who I have become because of those trials and tribulations. Okay. And the book allowed me to realize that we too, who are seedlings from Africa brought here to America, who was bred from those 15 slave states here in America, and we spend so much time using the color of the boogeyman, okay, the white man, the boogeyman. We constantly giving all this power and authority to the boogeyman, the white man, the boogeyman and everything, and missing the real authority comes from God. The trials and tribulations comes from God. And what is it that we're supposed to be getting? And so what I realized, what the book helped me to realize, stop blaming folks for what God has something for you. Your trials and tribulations is meant for you to go through. Stop blaming those people that you keep saying, the white man, the this and that, and realize I'm not that person.
So you're, in terms of life-changing, You had another epiphany.
Right, sir. That's right.
And so I want to know, and I think our listening audience wants to know, and we're going to take a break in a minute. And after the break, we're going to open up the lines and get our listening audience to call in and be a part of the conversation. But the question I'm asking you is, what opportunities and or challenges have been presented to you as a direct result of writing this book?
Well, without going into the legal matter that I went into, had I not been writing this book, I would not have been able to win the lawsuit that I went up against, being fired in 2018 from a hospital facility here in this town. And Kevin, I can look in your eyes and tell you, my friend, had I not been spending the time researching in discovering who I was, the dominant European culture who put me in unemployment because of the color of my skin, made me do a checkup from the neck up about the times of the 60s and everything are still present and here. But the difference is that we're not those who were born before 1960. And this is what I really want to say. The book helped me to realize I'm born after 1960, okay? I'm not born before 1960. I'm born after 1960. I'm born in the era of the civil rights. I'm born in the era where Martin Luther King spoke. I'm born in the time where it says the dream will come. I'm born in the time when Martin Luther King said there's going to be a time that former slave owners and descendants of slaves going to sit at the same table in brotherhood. I'm born in that period, okay? Right. But what I realize is that you got to check people in their nonsense, okay? Mm-hmm. And the book, my friend, to answer you bluntly, man, writing this book gave me the power to defeat what was coming at me. And that's all I'm going to say. I defeated it.
Amen. Amen. That's a powerful testimony. Folks, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to open the lines. You'll be able to call in. The number here is 502-571-1240. You get a chance to hear from this great author, Uncle Meek Shorn Daniels, dear friend, and his book, I Am Not Your Black America, is for sale. You can get it out on Amazon.com, and it is out there. But you'll be get a chance to talk to him right after the break.
Louisville Central Community Centers is celebrating 75 years of service to the community. LCCC is officially announcing the 75-year challenge and pledge. Join in the celebration and pledge your support by donating $75 today. Your donation goes directly to support the families we serve daily. Mail your donations to LCCC, 1300 West Muhammad Ali, 40203. Call 502-853-8821. Or log on to lcccnews.org.
Are you ready to make a real impact in your community? Look no further than AmeriCorps Vista's Russell Neighborhood Capacity Building Project at LCCC. Become a Vista Community Impact Ambassador. Become a catalyst for positive change. Picture yourself working hand-in-hand with local leaders, organizations, and residents to empower the Russell neighborhood. As a Vista volunteer, you'll play a vital role in creating lasting solutions to address poverty and inequality. Your dedication will help build a stronger, more vibrant community for everyone. Make a difference, make connections, and make memories that will last a lifetime. Join the AmeriCorps Vista team at LCCC's Russell Neighborhood Capacity Building Project today. Visit our website at lcccnews.org. To learn more and apply. Be the change you want to see in the world. Become AmeriCorps Vista Community Impact Ambassador, where your passions meet action.
Welcome back to Russ on the Move, and welcome again to Give for Good Day. Let us remind you that today is the day where you can give to the nonprofit of your choice. And I hope if you're listening to this show that Louisville Central Community Centers is among those organizations. We have our 75-year challenge that's available going out on our website. We'll respectfully receive your donation today and beyond, because the 75-year challenge will happen for the next 365 days as we continue to celebrate 75 years of community impact serving children and families in this market. We're going to continue our conversation with our special guest today, Meek Shorn Daniels, the author of the book, I Am Not Your Black America. I had a chance to have a moment of fellowship with him during the break and learned that we want to sell this book, but you don't have to go out on Amazon.com. You can go directly to UncleMeekShorn.com and other outlets. But the lines are open. And you can call in and talk directly with this author, ask him your own questions or give him your comments. But, brother, we're going to continue this conversation because I still have questions. Herbert may have his own. And we're going to just keep this going. We talked before the break about, you know, what inspired you and what has happened in your life as a result. You gave us a powerful testimony right before the break of having prepared you to be victorious,
yes,
in the pursuit of justice, and having learned more about yourself,
yes,
and that's powerful. I really, really appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, James Baldwin wrote the book "I Am Not Your Negro,"
yes,
and then you write in the book "I Am Not Your Black." And here in America, we've been all of those, Negro, Black, African-American. But now the descendants of slavery, of American slavery, we're going to talk about that. But I see that we do have a caller on the line, and I'm going to pause for a minute. But think about that. I want to unpack this whole identification crisis that we have experienced in America and how that still manifests today. But caller, welcome to the show. Give us your name, question, or comment.
Greetings in the name of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. This is Brother Strong. I looked on Facebook where Brother Daniels, Mr. Daniels, was going to be on there this morning, and I plugged my radio up the first time in almost a year. I have not listened to the AM or FM radio, but I just want to say this about Mr. Daniels, that I know for a fact personally, when I first met Mr. Daniels, I realized he was everything that the book says. I told Meshon when I first met him, I said, you're different from all of the other so-called Negroes or Blacks, because you had the ability to communicate and go across the lines. And a lot of people are going to be calling you a coon, my brother, even though I think just like you, that it's more than just a Black or white issue. Meshon is definitely what the book say that he is. And I just want to say that, and after this broadcast go off, I'm going to take my radios and unplug them from the wall again. But thank you so very much for allowing me this opportunity to say that I saw the book coming before Meshon even wrote it. I knew that he was different. He can bridge the gap. He's between people. And I just want to thank you all for the opportunity. And you all have a great day and a good broadcast, and I like the way you're asking him these questions, and I know he does too, because those are questions that show the interest of this broadcast is far-reaching. Thank you so very much. I'll get off the line.
God bless you. Thank you. Thank you.
I just want to acknowledge Brother Strong. He has a copy of my book, and it was kind of funny. Brother Strong said, you know, he initially said, man, I don't need to read the book. I'm going to get the book and support you just because I know. He said, I know who you are. I appreciate who you were. And he came out to my first book signing. Brother Strong is an elder. Okay. Yes. And I met that brother on the corner of the street when he used to do that bullhorn. That's how long I've been around. Okay. He's doing that bullhorn. And I didn't know who he was initially and everything. But when I got the time to appreciate him, he's one of the elders that I truly respect in this city. Okay. Mm-hmm. Him and I has always kept it blunt, 100. Okay. And I appreciate your comments, Doc. Appreciate you, man. Love you back to it. All you just did, you showed me some love, man. I appreciate your love, bro.
Likewise, I appreciate the two, Brother Strong. One thing Brother Strong echoed is, you know, the theme of Negroes, Black, and now we're
trying to pursue the American descendants of slaves, which I'm glad that you went there. Like in my book, and I think Herb caught it too when I said American descendants of slaves. And I may be very blunt because it is in my book. As good as all we have done culturally, as the demographics of people, as good as all the great heroes and all the people we want to put out there, and everybody, we can put all the names on them, okay? As good as that has been, we still drop the ball when the color construct still controls us, okay? And the reason why I say that, the color construct was intentionally put in place since 1600 back in Jamestown, Virginia, when they initially the dominant European culture, the Britons and America. So it was used to be Britons and America. It was a double occupied city at the time before 1776. The color construct came into place when Nathaniel Bacon did a rebellion against the governing class. And at that time, he was doing a rebellion for At the time, there was the indentured slaves. Indentured slaves, anyone that was owed debt that were coming from Britain and everything, they still owed the debt. They were indentured slaves, and they could look as like European or white folks, okay? And then you had the Africans who were captured from Africa, brought to America, and everything. They was there, okay? And then you had the Indians. And they were concerned about the behavior that the rich elitists, the privileged, was treating them. So he rebelled. He mobilized the what we call the underserved majority during that time. He killed them all, man. He wiped them. I mean, bro, they wiped them out. Mm-hmm. Wiped them out so bad that the Britons had to go back to the UK, you know, United Kingdom, bring up some ships and everything, and they came in, wiped them out. So the reason why that story is so important, nobody researched and found out there was a specific epiphany. They had an epiphany. The epiphany was, this is where the color came in. We rich white people gonna hire you poor white folks, okay? That's literally where the conversation is at. We rich white people. We gonna hire you poor white people, okay?
Yeah.
And you know that to be true because in the movie Roots. It's in the movie Roots, okay?
Yeah.
And so to make sure this rebellion never occur again, we need for you all to manage all non-white folks for us.
Yeah.
And that's where the color construct came into
place. So in America, when we talk color, we talk race, at the core of the conversation, and you summed it up well when you said rich versus poor. We're talking about economics.
You're talking about economics.
And we're talking about economic disparity.
Right.
The differences. And so when we talk about all these concerns around race, whether it be black, Negro, whether it be descendants of American slaves, the question that's very relevant to this broadcast, because we talk about addressing, you know, it's the mission of this organization
right.
to advance equity.
Right.
And we're talking about economic
literacy.
Literacy and gain.
And gain,
right. Because there are gaps. And so the question is how do these related movements address the concerns of economic as well as educational disparity? What is your message from your platform? How do we make more gains to close gaps? Because I don't want to get political here,
no,
Brother Meshawn, but there is a movement that's underway to undo what little bit of gain that has happened since the civil rights movement. When you look at the, you know, Supreme Court attack
right.
on affirmative action and, you know, the anti-woke movement that's
right.
very alive and well.
Exactly.
And so these are efforts to chip away at the base of any economic gain. So how do we galvanize ourselves as a community so that we don't drop the ball, we don't lose further ground? What is your message?
So to answer that question as quickly and straight is that first you got to acknowledge the wrongs that was done in the beginning, okay? It's like, me being a medical person, I understand that we understand if a patient is on the table, have an infection, okay, and you're treating it with antibiotics, but the antibiotics is not working, okay, you have to find the proper antibiotic that's going to treat the infection. The problem is that if you don't find the right one, you got to scrape it all the way back to the beginning. You got to scrape it all the way back to the beginning and find a new antibiotic. So here's what I'm saying is the antibiotic. What I'm suggesting, we got to scrape away, okay, what was told to us. And that's why I say we have to learn how to unlearn or relearn. It's in my book. You got to learn how to unlearn or relearn. So here's what we got to learn to unlearn. The dominant European culture who put all these derogatory terminologies and everything in place was never for our good. It was never for our good. It was always to keep us away from our birthrights, birthplace, and our inheritance. These are terminologies I specifically talk about. And the terminology is not reparation, is inheritance. And the reason why we say that is because when you realize that the dominant European culture made America a corporation and they paid nothing out to our ancestors in reparation and everything, but they kept all this wealth and they invested it into the infrastructure of this country, ding, 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 slave became a new investment tool. So if we want what God has for us, we have to be willing to identify those people who's already laid the foundation for us. Black don't get us there. African Americans don't get us there. Negro don't get us there, okay? What gets us to, it's called username and password. What gets us into the 21st century is identifying with a new username that gets us to the new password. We got to get a password and username. And what gets us there is saying that I'm proud to say that I identify with my ancestors who are descendants of American slaves. And Noah's book, Noah Shelton's book, was right on term when he said that we're not Negro, we're not Black and African American.
That's America's
little black. America's little white. He was right on term. He was right on time. Yeah. Right on time. But he didn't go far enough, okay? The deal is that if we're going to, and I mean, Kevin, I'm at, it doesn't matter about what's all that other. We have to get our name right. We got to get it right because we got
all
right, these people.
Now, but I'm going to press you, though.
No, because, go ahead.
Because I'm going to say that's a given. We got our name right.
We don't got it right yet.
Well, no. We got Americans of descendants of American slaves. We've got the Adolphs. We've got Dossie. And there's a movement that is afoot. Now, maybe it's not the predominant movement, but it's there. And so here's my question. Let's say we got that part right. Then what? Then what do we do?
Okay. I'm glad. You guys, I love you, bro. You asked a good question. So just like anything, you got to know who you're dealing with, so you got to get the name right, okay? So we got to get the legislation right to remove color off the legislation. We cannot, because all these immigrants and everybody coming in, they're going to take advantage of just black, okay? If you just say you black, okay, then black don't do anything because everybody can jump in that. So we have to identify. We got to pull ourselves out and say, this is who I am. Now, once we do that, okay, then we become a voting block of our interests only, okay? Our interests only. So when you pull yourself out, and it don't make no difference what party it is. Look at here. For the American descendants of slaves, what you doing? What you talking to us about? Okay. The best example of that was when Ice Cube did his thing, Contract with Black America. That, let me tell you something, man. That, I was so proud of that. The only thing I wanted to change it from black and say descendants of America. What's the contract for descendants of America? That was the start of something, dude. And we let, but I'm not going to go get, we, I'm going to say, not them, we dropped the ball in
well,
that.
You bring up Ice Cube, and
yes.
it takes me to the state of California.
Yes.
And you've done some things in the state of California yes. that you've talked about recently. State of California has passed legislation around reparations,
right?
And you know, some of the founders, co-founders, and co-authors of this ADOS movement are in California,
right?
And they have been pressing that issue forward. What do you say about that? And the operative word is reparations. Are we seeking reparations? If so, how do we get it?
I'm of the belief that reparation is the wrong. Even though somebody say you know. In the medical field, if you don't use the right terminology, it sends you down the wrong rabbit hole, okay? Reparation is not the terminology for us in the 21st century. It's an inheritance. So we have to understand inheritance. So when first, okay, which one is greater? When you say reparation or inheritance, which one is greater? Which one has the greater value, reparation or inheritance?
Well, I think those are two distinctly different concepts. Reparation is talking about repairing for the damage. You talked about recognizing the damage that was done through slavery and being accountable and responsible for repairing that damage that still, there's remnants of that that's still today. Inheritance suggests that there is wealth that was created by a prior generation that's going to be passed down to the next generation that are in line for receiving that.
Exactly.
So those are two different concepts to me. Now, I wouldn't contrast them because I think both of them have their place.
Well, the good thing about when you're talking to the dominant European culture in finances, they know clearly the difference. When I have these conversations with them, they look over and their eyes roll in their head and everything because I'm talking
investment. How does inheritance work then?
Okay, inheritance.
In terms of public policy, how does that work?
You first got to put the conversation, you got to put it on the table. Okay. See, we not putting the right password. Like I keep saying, username. You got to put the right username in there. Slave is associated to inheritance, okay? Slave is not associated with reparation. Reparation, because this country reincorporated in 1871. Now, a lot of people don't understand. Well, from 1776 to 1871, America redid a contract with the Britons and they redid it. They broke away from America and they became the United States of America. A moment that, and you got to think from a business, you're a corporate, you're a businessman, okay? Mm-hmm. You got to think from it from a business and not an emotional thing. Get your emotions out of it. So when you say that reparation and America reincorporated from 1776 to 1871, that means everything associated with the slaves and everything and what took place and all that went in. Wait, what do reincorporation mean? Reincorporation means you did away. You start over. And so the moment that they started over, but the Civil War that took place between the North and the South, there was a memorandum of understanding that took place. Everybody know the South had all the money. North didn't have the money. The South had the money. So when they went into agreement and understanding concept, they didn't have nobody on the table like that looked like us on the negotiating table that looked like us to talk about our emancipation and what it looked like.
Right.
You had the dominant European culture doing all the negotiating. Guess what? There was money that transferred between the South and the North. And when they did that, that's our wealth that they invested into the infrastructure that makes us shareholders. So where I'm going. We are shareholders of this country.
All right, brother. Well, you know, this has been a great conversation. There's no way you can do justice to this powerful discussion and powerful book in an hour. But I just want to thank you. And Herbert, I know you've been soaking this in. And this is an introduction to you. I've known Meshawn for a while, and I've been following this guy, and I've been reading the book. But I noticed he brought two copies in here, and I got one. I don't know what he's going to do with the other one, but maybe.
I guess it goes to me, huh, Kevin?
All right, I got another one in the car. This is the hard copy. I've definitely brought, and I want to let everybody know, we got an event. Like, can I do this real quick?
Yeah.
We got an event that's going to just taking place this Saturday. We're going to be hanging out with two other fellas. I got Jeremiah Roan, and then I have Sonny Fishback. Sonny Fishback. We're going to be at 2500 Montgomery Street, number 9. And are from 3:30 to 5 or until whatever.
It's over in Portland.
Yes, in Portland area. Okay. I want everybody to come out and celebrate with us. I'm going to be giving away a couple free books and everything, but you can't get it if you don't show up and everything.
And what's the time for that?
It's from 3:30 to 5 or until the thing wrap up. And we're going to have food. We're going to have documentaries. The brother, Jeremiah Roan, put together a film festival. Okay, so it's going to be film, food, and conversation going on there this Saturday and thing. And so I want to recommend everybody who's listening to the summit, come out to 2500 Montgomery Street over in Portland and come and have some fun with us. You get the opportunity to learn a little bit about me, but you can also learn about Jeremiah Rome, his brother. They still say I'm not a man. And then Plant a New Seed by Sonny Fishback.
Amen, amen, amen. Well, this is a powerful book, you know, and I'm looking at the back cover and it reads, in most of American history, those who saw themselves as white passed through a nonverbal color construct, and thus great privileges and protection have been granted to them. Truth be told, American immigrants have benefited from this nonverbal policy of passing the first glance as white in America because of their white skin and lighter eyes. Indeed, they have been granted equal status as white and were undeservedly elevated above the American slave status. All of this injustice went on for decades after Jamestown Revolt and Nathaniel Bacon's Rebellion in 1676 on the Southern plantations, and then original industrialized 15 slave states. This book is an untold and very challenging view of American history. Since the slaves were bred in America while they were laboring to build America, the descendants of American slaves have gained a unique birthright, an inheritance as the firstborn generation of American slaves. This terminology, made in America, can only be claimed by these descendants of America. Many credits go to the emergence of capitalism in America and the world of slavery, especially on August 20th of 2019, when global pandemic of COVID virus shut down capitalism and coincidence of promise. Uncle Meeshorn. I just wanted to read that excerpt just to give everybody just a taste of what's in this powerful book. And Meeshorn, you know, you asked me the other day when we were talking, well, you didn't ask me, you told me, you said you didn't think I had a book in me here. But I always knew you was an intellectual, but this book proves just how much of an intellectual you are, because you use your own life story, you've done some independent research, and you've created a compelling case for why America needs to change. And it is starting with, you know, righting some wrongs and claiming who we are. I am not, is the title. I am not your black America. Meet Sean T. Floyd Daniels. Thank you for stopping by today, brother.
I want to thank you for allowing me to hang out and everything. And I want to tell you that my meeting going to see David Chappelle, okay, actually, I'm so glad that I went, because I'm going to say it on the air, and I said I wanted to make sure the brother done changed on us. He's not what he was. He's not. I'm going to say it right now. And I've told everybody I was going to say it. David Chappelle done flipped on us. He said and did some things that I was totally ashamed of, okay, totally embarrassed and everything, that he would go there. They said the N-word so much and everything, and I was fortunate because I had good seats. So the seats that I was at, I could see down David Chappelle's mouth. That's how good my seats
were. Now, that's another show now. A Dave Chappelle review is another show. So I want to thank you for coming by today, brother. I do have a few, as we close this show, have a few announcements. Excited about next week's show. Please tune in next Thursday at 9 a.m. Brother Scott Love with the Local Initiative Support Corporation, LISC Louisville. Everybody knows Scott. He's a deacon. St. Stephen, president of the Deacon Board there, and is an economic developer in this market for a long time with Louisville Metro Government. Now he's the executive director of LISC. He will be here talking about resources that his organization is aiming toward us. So be here next week. We also are going to continue the 75-year challenge. Today is Give for Good Day. You know, be good to the nonprofits that serve your children and your family, and keep this special nonprofit that's celebrating 75 years in mind when you do that. Do that by giving on our website, lcccnews.org. Herbert, we've got some great programs coming up in the BIC. We got the Skill Up, Change Up, Badge Up going on. We got the PNC Bank Series helping businesses to learn how to get their finances in order. And a great seminar series happening there. And then we're aiming for October. Big, big month. October is Economic Mobility Month, and we've got several events coming up in the month of October at Old Walnut Street under the leadership of LCCC and several partners. So stay tuned. You'll hear more about Economic Mobility Month in future shows. I do want to close with just a word of congratulations. Herbert, did you want to get something in?
Yeah, I just want to say to Sean that I was talking to my son yesterday about the title, you know, Black in America, right? But really didn't understand exactly what it was about. It was a book, right? So I thought maybe it was just a quote of Black in America. So it was really good to hear, you know, what that meant. What that means to you, and you know, it's a real good book from what I, you know, heard about and plan on reading it, but I just want you to know that, you know, we talked about it. So your book, your quote makes people think about, you know, what's the detail, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Thank you, brother. And he's going to come back. He's going to be welcome back. When you hit that bestseller chart and you got some, you know, donations you want to give to your friends in the community that helped you along the way, we'll be here for you, brother. No, but final comment, and we're at the hour. I do want to congratulate Zyberia Perrier and Tiffany Williams. You're going to hear from them later. We just completed our Purpose Driven Developer Academy series this past week, and there will be a ceremony coming up in October. We had 13 cadets in that. They learned the basics of how to develop real estate, and they're going to be building this community going forward. But that's going to wrap up our show for today. We want to thank our host here, WLLV, Brother Vince Graves. And we're going to sign off with just a word of, you know, be safe, be good, give for good. And until next week, God bless you. We'll be back.
Thank you for listening to Russell on the Move, LCCC's weekly affairs update on Russell and surrounding neighborhoods in West Louisville. We hope you enjoyed our show and took away news you can use to help lift your spirits and increase your prosperity. Join us next week as we continue our mission, equity advancement and community empowerment. For now, be safe, be blessed. Until we meet again, the LCCC. Leading with vision, educating on economic mobility, advancing equity, developing quality.